the Antoinette system and tune in to the Pearl White system at RadioArian.com.
Hello and welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Thursday, the 26th of April, 2018, and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks. Of course, I'm joined today by Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson from RussJournal.org. Matt, how are you doing today?
You know, every time I'm in a bad mood or I feel bad about the world, I think of Putin's opposition in the presidential election, and I feel better instantly. Yavlinsky, the pro-American candidate, you know, he won such a low number that it didn't even register in the computers. It's like 0.05. These men live enviable lives.
Well, I was just going to say that picks you up and puts you in a good mood. I suddenly find myself, my mood lifting as soon as we begin doing these podcasts. You know, it's definitely.
I am charismatic.
Yeah. It definitely puts a positive spin on the day. And you wanted to talk about Putin and his victory at the election a while back, because we haven't actually discussed this yet, even though it took place, I guess, a month ago, something like that. I mean, that there's been lots of events that have taken place since then or around then that have distracted from it. But I mean, it really was quite magnificent. I mean, it was a huge victory that he actually had. I mean, what was the actual percentage that he won by, and how many people turned out to vote? First off, before we get into this article that we're gonna pull apart.
Well, turnout was extremely high. In fact, the Russian government and most of the even private entities were really putting pressure on people to vote, which, you know, means a very confident government, a very confident Putin. You had 8 candidates. Putin won just under his popularity rating. For a field of 8 candidates, for him to win 72% is ridiculous. I mean, he's the most popular man in the country, and his opposition was so ridiculous. These people just send out these sacrificial lambs. It's like Bob Dole in 1996, you know, you know, these poor men, you know. Zhirinovsky, the Americans put up. He's, I think his real name is Teitelbaum. He's a Jew that pretends to be a nationalist, and he won like 6%. And the liberals were also, you know, he was the nationalist candidate, which the liberals kept repeating over and over again to make him seem like a nationalist. Yeah, he's a fool. He was a Jewish nationalist back in the 80s, formed a very liberal party, which is why his party is called the Liberal Democratic Party. And then he was talked into changing to some, you know, secular nationalism by the Americans in the early 90s. And so he's a joke. But according to the American press, everybody, he's a nationalist candidate. So it's really a sick group of people. It's a really messed up group of people. But the one who's so there's 2 Jewish candidates. Zhirinovsky and Levinsky. Levinsky should be executed, in my opinion, because this is a man who authored the privatization scheme that almost destroyed Russia in the early 90s. His policy is called the cause of death of hundreds of thousands of people. The fact that he's still alive, I think, maybe be the best punishment rather than putting a bullet in his head. Having him still live and see him repudiated every day of his life and having such a low turnout that it doesn't even register on the computers, really, it's probably a fate worse than just execution. So, yeah, it's a good day. It's a good day. And because of the sanctions and everything else, this election was so uninteresting because there's no one to beat Putin. So, you know, it was just fun to watch these guys get humiliated, though.
I would say that the politicians in the West would kill to get 70%. I mean, that's a really good showing. I mean, the closest I can think of to that is in Hungary recently, and that was two parties together. That was Fidesz party and Jobbik party. So you had Orban and you had Jobbik there. Both together, they got 70% of the vote. But just for one party and one man to get 70%, I mean, he's got to be doing something right. But of course, we're told, oh, no, no, it's all fake. He's doing something wrong. And what we've got here is an article from Pravda that details six of the main allegations that were made by the West about this election. And the first one is this. It says, the first thing that catches the eye in all analytical articles is the assumption about Vladimir Putin overtaking Stalin in terms of political longevity. Putin's victory will take his political dominance of Russia to nearly a quarter of a century, until 2024, by which time he will be 71. Only Soviet dictator Joseph Stalin ruled for longer, Business Standard wrote. This assertion implicitly draws parallels with the Stalin era, which in the West is commonly referred to as fascist. In addition, Putin is criticized for his irrepressible desire for power. Now, I think that's quite interesting because, you know, the way that the word fascist has changed, just for a start, that communists are now being called fascists. And they also conveniently forget that Angela Merkel has been in power for 20 years. And nobody says anything about that. But they seem to want to link Putin with Stalin for some reason. So what are your thoughts on that, Matt?
I've said this many times before. The sign of an ignoramus is someone who uses labels as a way to substitute for knowledge. That's about 95% of the political commentators out there worldwide. And fascist is one of these labels. It doesn't mean anything in America, but you have to kind of specialize in the domestic ideas over there to understand how it's being used. The word is just it's like a curse word over there. It doesn't refer to any real doctrine, except that it's something. So you know, essentially, liberal capitalism enforced by an authoritarian system, which is what Yeltsin would try to do. So that's really what it's not really what it means, but that's how it's being used.
What about this link with Stalin, though, saying that Putin is like Stalin? Is there any truth to that? What are the similarities between him and Stalin apart from being in power for a long time?
I want to say that it's hard to say. It's more differences. The main difference is that the U.S. supported Stalin, poured cash and investment money into his country, traded vigorously with it. Built it up prior to World War II, fought for it during World War II, and then rebuilt it after World War II. The issue has more to do with U.S. absolute, you know, and the propaganda campaign in favor of Stalin was overwhelming in the West. So I'm not really sure what they're talking about here. Putin is elected. They have very few similarities. In fact, I could hardly think of one. They're human. They're male. That's what I got so far.
Well, it's interesting you bring up there that America was very, very friendly with Stalin, obviously fought on the same side during the war, and also worked with the Soviet Union. And, you know, you've mentioned quite a few times, you've said that there has never been such anti-Russian propaganda as there is now during the Cold War. And you're not the only person to say that. Sergei Lavrov, the foreign minister for Russia, you often see him speaking at the UN. He was interviewed on British television the other day. And the interview finished with him saying exactly the same thing, saying that that there was never this amount of what he called Russophobia during the Soviet times. It is all aimed at Putin. And he was basically saying exactly the same thing that you've been saying for quite some time. So it was interesting to hear a mainstream politician echoing completely your sentiments, Matt.
Well, there's no doubt the Russian foreign ministry listens to my show and copies everything down and beats it.
I hope so.
Why should they be different? Why should they think everyone else does? I don't see why they don't.
They might well do.
It's absolutely true. The U.S. built the Soviet Union. The U.S. then rebuilt the Soviet Union after the Second World War. There would be no Soviet Union without the British and the Americans. There was never any sanctions on the Soviets, with the exception of a brief period of time after the invasion of Afghanistan. Corporate America has been heavily invested in Soviets for a long time. Soviets, communism and capitalism have far more similarities than differences. Russia is a nationalist state today. generally speaking, and promotes nationalism elsewhere. That is the enemy, the very opposite of globalization. Therefore, Russia is going to be the enemy now. And, there was no anti-Soviet action domestically in the U.S., unless, of course, it had something to do with the extension of Soviet power. The Soviet Union could have been run on British liberal principles, and it still would have frightened the U.S., because surely just because of its size. But generally speaking, the trade with the Soviet Union was great, was tremendous, and most Russian technicians were trained in America. And they brought back their education and then built their own institutions there. Everything. I mean, GE built the Gulag system in outline and built the electrical grid. This is, you know, I could go on and on. Everything in the Soviet Union came from the West. And because now Russia has repudiated Western ideology, now there's trouble.
And Macron yesterday, I noticed that Trump calls him Macron, and he does seem to have a liking for crones when you look at his wife. But Macron yesterday said that nationalism is the enemy when he was giving his speech to Congress. And I did notice that Congress cheered, and yet Donald Trump has said that he supports nationalism, or at least a civic version of it. But Macron was quite upfront saying that nationalism was the enemy. Well, the second thing that Pravda say attracts one's attention about the coverage of the Russian presidential election in the West refers to opposition activist Alexei Navalny, someone who we've spoken about before on this show. Putin's main foe, opposition leader Alexei Navalny, was barred from the race because of a criminal conviction which was widely seen as politically motivated. Navalny has called for a boycott of the vote, Fox News said. So notice the way that they say that this criminal conviction was a politically motivated conviction. I guess they were saying that if Alexei Navalny hadn't been claiming that he was a politician, then he wouldn't have been in trouble. He didn't actually commit any crime. What was the crime that Alexei Navalny was found guilty of, Matt?
You know, we did a whole show on that, remember? And I can't remember off the top of my head. Yeah. It was economic. I don't remember. There's so many of these guys, I can't keep – and he's so irrelevant too. I just don't really think of him very much. The man wouldn't be worth the effort to shut him down. His allies in the election got 0.0004% of the vote. You know, having him run is actually better than not because of, you know, the ridiculous results that they get. The only thing this man can do – well, he had two options. First thing is that he could douse himself with gasoline and set himself on fire, you know, in some kind of protest. That's pretty much one option. The second option is to call for a boycott. So at least, you know, there's something. And no one listened to him. It was the highest turnout in a long time. So it's, you know, why spend any more than 5 seconds of effort on this guy? He's not a threat to anybody.
It was corporate corruption, if I remember correctly. Corporate corruption, and I think he got at least a year in prison, and I think they suspended the sentence. But if you've got a criminal record, then you can't really stand for office. And it's not like this guy has ever been a threat. Putin said during his most recent stint, where he gets questioned by all the journalists, you know, he stands there for 3 or 4 hours taking questions from journalists once a year. And part of it, he was being asked about this opposition, and he was saying that I really wish I did have some credible opposition, because you need somebody to struggle against. You know, you need somebody to be debating with and arguing with to test yourself and to improve yourself. I mean, he's basically coming out with the same principle that National Socialism is based on, that we need to have struggle to improve ourselves. And that's what he was pointing out. And he was saying this guy, Alexei Navalny, is just not worthy of being opposition. You know, he's not going to improve himself by going against somebody who is a convicted criminal. Well, thirdly, Western journalists say that the Russian authorities use the administrative resource to ensure a high turnout. Fox News quoted a 20-year-old woman named Daria Sazlina and Yekaterinburg mayor Yevgeny Roizman, who were terrified of the pressure. They are using everything, schools, kindergartens, hospitals. The battle for the turnout is unprecedented, said Reutzmann, one of the rare opposition politicians to hold a significant elected office, Fox News reports. And I remember seeing some of this, and they were saying that people were being overly encouraged to vote. They were being forced to vote, and it was implied that they were being forced to vote for Putin. Yeah, everything was just, you know, they had people dressed up as furry toys. They had pop groups playing in the election offices. They were doing lots to get people to go out and vote, but they weren't saying you had to vote for Putin. And yet that's what the implication was. I mean, I saw this on BBC and they're talking about it on Fox News here. But there was no forcing people to vote for Putin. And there was one instance, I think, of a ballot box, and it looked like it was being stuffed, but there was nothing to say that was being stuffed for Putin. I mean, why would Putin have to rig the vote when he has 80% 80% approval ratings?
That's exactly it. I've been saying that, I've been screaming this for almost two decades now. He has no, the only person that could benefit from, you know, hurting an opposition figure or getting caught stuffing a ballot box is his opposition. They would love for him to go shoot Navalny in the head. That would be wonderful for them. It'd be the only attention that they ever get that isn't negative. The guy says they're using everything, including kindergartens. Is he implying that they're trying to get kindergartners to vote? You know, he's just listing institutions one after another. Fox News did try to say that these were, you know, pushing the vote for Putin. But wanting a high turnout means a very, very confident Putin. In other words, he wants his mandate to be great. And so he wants to get everybody out there. Rigging ballot boxes and messing around like that, he would want a low turnout. So it's really the whole thing. And that argument is not being used much anymore. It's going to blow up in their face and their. So they backed off on that, but it just shows you how confident Putin is, and there's no reason why he shouldn't be.
Well, there were lots of cameras in the actual places where people were voting. That's how we saw that there was this woman that was stuffing the ballot box. That was the only one. And I dare say that what they mean by kindergartens and schools there is that they are teaching children that they should go out and vote. They should do their civic duty and vote for people. I mean, they do the same in every democratic country. They try to encourage people to vote. It's just that in Russia, they have actually had some success and they did get a large turnout, unlike in the West, where we are completely disillusioned with politics. Well, fourthly, Western journalists buy into the idea that the reason for Putin's victory is his ability to play on the desire of the Russians to rebuff the West in Syria, in Ukraine, and everywhere else. Moreover, they assert that this Tsarist chauvinism is brought up on the ill interpretation of friendly intentions of the West to sow democracy in bad countries. Western media rightly conclude, though, that British Prime Minister Theresa May, when trying to consolidate the British on the eve of Brexit and being unable to see a log in her own eye, played into Putin's hands with the case of Sergei Skripal. I mean, they were trying. I didn't get this. I mean, why would Putin be accused of killing one of his own citizens if he was trying to win an election? Surely that would have hurt him in the election. But they tried to put it across that this was Putin proving what a hard man he is by sending somebody into Britain to go after Sergei Skripal. And this nonsense that the West is being friendly to Russia, I've never seen anything like it. Take this Sergei Skripal case, for instance. They demanded that Russia explain how they killed Sergei Skripal. They didn't say, can you answer this question? Can you answer that question? Can you give us some samples so that we can test these samples with these samples? They just said, tell us how you did it. You know, they implied that the guilt was Russia's already. So, of course, Russia isn't going to answer that. They just sent back 20 questions of their own saying, why aren't you going along with the OPCW, the Organization for Prevention of Chemical Weapons Treaty? Why aren't you following that treaty, which Britain hasn't done? And we've also heard since then that apparently the chemical itself, it wasn't this Novichok, or it may have had Novichok in it, but it also had a hallucinogenic drug in it, which a Swedish or a Swiss lab has discovered, which we're not being told in Britain. I think we've got more to learn about this case still. But what do you think about this then, Matt, that the Russians just voted for him because they're anti the West and they want to see Putin starting war in Syria and Ukraine, and I guess they think Putin's building a new empire, this sort of thing. What do you think of that?
It's yeah, there's so many things that just pour into my head when I see this. The assassination thing completely blew up in the West's face. They're also humiliated with the stupid election meddling thing. I mean, they're really bad at this. Tsarist chauvinism, and Woodrow Wilson used to praise the Bolsheviks to the skies unless they acted like a czar. Then all of a sudden he becomes anti-Bolshevik. This is the terror of the West. This is the absolute terror of the system. As far as nationalism goes, they simply define it however they want. They'll define it in the worst possible sense, then pat themselves on the back if they're opposed to it. It's completely arbitrary. But in the late 90s, about 20% of Russians believed that their country was a world power. Today, it's almost 85%. This is why Western politicians would give their right arms to be Putin, to have his authority, not power, his authority, and how he's not dependent on any financial institution or powerful group to stay in power. He's an institution in and of himself. The way that Jews treat him, for example, the Jews come to America from Israel and they're walking into a Chinese restaurant. They own the place. They walk into Russia and they're really, really nice to Putin because they better be. They're in no position of strength there. In America, they walk into it like it's their own house. Russia, they're trying to be as nice to him as possible, get as many photo ops as they possibly can, because pissing him off is a very, very, very bad idea. And he's nice to them back because so many of these Jewish investors have Russian money still abroad that was stolen and taken out of the country in the 90s. So he has to be very careful trying to get some of that cash back. But if Russians are voting for that reason, then it's probably more rational than what the average American votes for, the handful of Americans that actually vote. I think off-year elections are anywhere between 25 and 30% of the vote, which is, an illegitimate election by any standard. So it's just, the more I read, the more a better mood I become. We need some white pills these days, I think.
Well, before Putin, they never would have been able to help Assad out in Syria. And I doubt very much whether the Crimea would have voted to join Russia. And that actually comes up in this fifth one. Fifthly, a lot has been said about violations. Anton Troyanovsky wrote on the pages of the Washington Post that the Russian authorities had arranged a massive spectacle from the Arctic to the ISS to show the scale of popular support without saying a word about numerous fakes that came from Navalny's supporters. The author gives an original interpretation to the voter turnout in the Crimea, claiming that the Crimeans had been persuaded that without Putin, the Crimea would fall into the abyss of war and gay marriage. I guess the Crimeans obviously didn't want to go to war, and I guess they wouldn't have wanted gay marriage, but I think it was far more important that the pensions were so much higher in Russia and the healthcare was so much better in Russia. And if you compare Russia's economy to Ukraine's economy, they're about 10 times better off. And they're full of Russians in the Crimea and full of Russians in Russia that speak Russian. That's why they voted to join Russia. I mean, it's a completely different narrative that's being spun to us in the West than you actually hear in Crimea. I mean, they're over the moon that they've managed to join Russia. What do you think about this piece here about Crimea and massive spectacles to try and show popular support?
I think that the Crimean vote really and truly was 100%, because the minute they joined Russia, they took over – the ruble took over the Ukrainian hryvnia currency. And their savings and wages went up by 300% just by changing over. They became wealthier people that way. Everything, and the Chinese are now rebuilding parts of the coastline and the infrastructure there. The Chinese have also offered to assist Ukraine so long as the pro-American government gets kicked out, which is the Ukraine is a fourth world country. It is one of the poorest countries in the world. It has no functional economy. It has no functional currency. How in heaven's name could you not vote to get away from there? The Crimeans never wanted to leave the Soviet Union. They were the only section that voted in favor of maintaining it, even at the end. But Ukraine is one of the most mismanaged, poverty-stricken countries on the planet. it's close to, you know, its colleagues really are like Ghana and Mali and Chad and in Africa. And yet Ukrainians are the most educated people in the world. They have more advanced degrees per capita than any other country on the planet. And it's really a heartbreaking thing to see how the West has deliberately destroyed these people. And people like Navalny and Levinsky are partially responsible for that. And so, but Levinsky, you know, is Jewish, and so he has no conscience. He thinks this is a wonderful thing to hurt people. But if he were a goyim, his conscience would be torturing him, I think.
Yeah, I did hear that the infrastructure was really bad in Crimea, and you know, it did need a lot of work doing. And of course, now that it's part of Russia, they're going to be up to the same standards as Russia, much higher standards than Ukraine. Well, finally, the presidential election in Russia has convinced the West that the latter must not back down in front of such a chauvinistic, racist, intolerant, etc. country as Russia. Australian television channel ABC, in the person of Jennifer Mathers, believes that Russia uses a wide range of hidden tools of intelligence and special services and neglects the rules of civilized behavior. If the West is really coming to the end of its patience with Russia, it could make Mr. Putin's next 6 years as president a lot less comfortable, she wrote. Robert Kuttner at the Huffington Post expands on the idea and suggests cutting Russia off from the banking system, prohibiting Russians from buying real estate in the West, and restricting their entry to Western countries. Well, if they're going to say that Russia is intolerant and uses hidden tools of Russia and neglects the rules of civilized behavior, it's only Russia that seems to obey the international law. They're the ones that have said that Syria is being invaded. They're the only country that really seems to stand up for sovereignty, independent sovereignty in these other nations. I've lost count of the amount of times that Russia has pointed out where the rest of the world is breaking international law. Putin really seems a stickler for sticking to the rules. To me, is a complete opposite of what they are saying here. What do you think about this, Matt, where they're saying cut Russia off from the banking system and cut them off from buying real estate in the West?
I know you. Yeah, they are so deluded. They think that's a bad thing to be cut off from the Western banking system. Do they know anything about the banking system in the West? It is, you know, being cut off from the Western banking system is the way to prosperity, is the way to independence, is the way to greater economic equality. Please cut us off from the Western banking system. The sanctions have done wonders for the Russian economy. You can't listen to the English language press because every other article that Russia's on the verge of collapse. They've been saying that since 2000. Every other week, China the same way. Every other week, the China's ready to collapse. They use that word, and it's wishful thinking. They're trying to visualize it, and hopefully maybe it happens if they all try to will it into existence. Please cut us off from the banking system. We beg you. And I love the Crimean section. They'd fall into an abyss of war and gay marriage. That's exactly what would happen to them. That's precisely what would happen to them. And there's a connection between war and gay marriage. And the American military bases in Afghanistan are flying the homosexual flag. Two Air Force colonels now have been forcibly retired for opposing the homosexual agenda. And in one case, at McCord, I have some enemies at McCord who are listening to the show right now. Go to hell, guys, by the way. You're pigs. Anyway, they're at McCord, one was fired for just being a Christian. It made the homosexuals on base uncomfortable. This is exactly what it said. And they needed a Freedom of Information Act request to get the information. So there's a purge of American military officers to get rid of Christians and anyone who supports the agenda. So I want to say one more time, the U.S. military is a liberal leftist institution, and that's what they are imposing by force on the world. So the abyss of war and gay marriage, that's precisely what would have happened to them. And Crimea went from a fourth world to a first world country in 6 months.
Well, so we can see it happening in Ukraine. We can see it happening in Ukraine, Matt. You know, they forced gay pride onto Ukraine, and each time they tried to have this gay pride, and they fly in people from faggots from all over Europe, and the farmers turn up with trucks full of manure, and they all fling manure at the faggots. But it is true.
Male faggots kind of have a thing for manure, so I'm not really sure. I don't think they get it there. But other things would be, you know, would be better, rocks and little batteries and things like that. There's an army riot, but the riot police don't do anything. They're not gonna get a bloody nose for these people. They're not even Russians, you know. Like you say, they're flown in from London and Washington D.C. It's almost exclusively Jewish if you look at the organizers, all the NGOs, and Putin has cut the foreign funding off from the NGOs. So it's going to be happening less and less. Ukraine is a different story, of course. That was all forced through the legislature, you know, because the legislature couldn't function with American money. So, and Ukraine is now called New Khazaria. I did a whole show on that. And it's, you know, so that this kind of thing, sanctions have, put it this way, sanctions have permitted Vladimir Putin to nationalize a lot of strategic industries, especially the central bank, connecting it to the Chinese economy, where they're going to de-dollarize very soon. They're doing it slowly but surely. And it's going to be a wonderful, wonderful world. There are white pills here. There's a lot of white pills here. But there may be a time, and I'm talking about the, you know, my enemies in the military and everything else, there may be a time where some of us may have to flee. I don't know when that's going to happen. The last words that Willis Carto ever said to me before he died was, you know, get out of here if there's ever a shooting war with the Russians. But they're right. A shooting war with the Russians would be purely ideological. Absolutely.
Well, hopefully it won't come to that. And the final part of the article, just before we finish, it says, what is troubling is that Western analysts do not understand why Trump came to power, and they do not understand why Putin still retains it. Today's middle-class Americans live worse than their parents lived, but in today's Russia, the younger generation lives better than their parents used to live. Above all, however, the Russians have always put the national idea above their own, their individual material well-being. And that is what nationalism is putting the nation before the individual. Matt, thank you very much for coming on today. Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. I'll be back tomorrow with more of the Daily Nationalist for you. God bless and hail victory.